Hi, Carm Capriotto here. Welcome to episode 395 and the eighth installment of the Shop Talk series. Now, today we're talking a second location, adding a new service to the shop, and the power of our image on our customers. Now, here's a taste.
The absolute vast majority of problem price shoppers, all of them, they're gone. It was unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And even the farmers that used to complain about the $20 tire repair, now when they come in and it's $40 to fix it, they're like, oh, that was it?
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome to an in-depth interview with a lot of useful scenarios on what our industry needs to improve upon. Carm Capriotto here, and I'm with industry pros Scott Palava, John Epstein, and Scott Gonzo Weaver. Hey, great news. Remarkable Results Radio is proud to partner with Napa Auto Care and the upcoming 2020 Napa Expo. Now join Napa in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020, to discover the latest innovations in the auto care industry. Enrollment? It's going on right now. Contact your Napa store to learn more. Hey, question. What are the issues plaguing our industry today? How do we deal with them? How do we solve them? Well, let me be bold enough and say that you're in the right spot to listen to discussions that turn shops into winners, conversations that turn good techs to great, and shop owners that are determined in paving their way to greater success. Hey, glad to have you here in the ecosystem of Perpetual Studency for Aftermarket Professionals. Hey, I'm so glad to welcome John Epstein from John's Automotive Care in San Diego, California, Scott Palava from Lonsdale Auto Works in Lonsdale, Minnesota. Former shop owner Scott Gonzo Weaver joins us. Now, Scott has added trainer to his resume and continues to be a recognized writer in our industry, and I'm sure you know of Gonzo's toolbox. Now, John tells us about his recent new location and a few challenges he didn't anticipate. Scott Palava has a great idea to add a service to his shop that many of you would not agree with, and Gonzo shares his wisdom of the ages. We also get into the aftermarket's image. There's a lot to chew on. Get the talking points, my guests' bios, and links to their previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/E395. Now, here we go. Hey, welcome, guys. So, hey, John, what's going on in California? Anything besides some beautiful weather at this time of the year?
Well, we've been quite busy. It's, you know, we've heard the ups and downs people have been going through. So we're making a lot of changes at the shop. So with all the changes, we're still crazy as can be.
Okay. So are you a guy who's always in perpetual change, John? Are you always trying new stuff?
Certain things, yes. Certain things, no. Yeah. When Ooh. It comes, yeah, yeah. I eat the same burrito for lunch every day. But, you know, as far as the shop goes, we're always looking for new things to do. We actually opened a second location in June. So after driving to the same place for 20 years, I decided, why don't we mix it up a little? And so.
What a big, bold move, a second place. Ooh.
Yeah.
So share with us for a really quick second. I'm sorry, there's no way you can tell me in a second how it went, but anything you've learned since June?
Absolutely. You know, the transition wasn't very smooth. I started talking to the other shop owner about the 5th of May, and I was the owner of it by the 23rd of May. He just wanted out. So we officially took over the 1st of June, but there was very little prep time. And it's not like I have five locations and I just move my stuff over. You know, we had to come up with people and, you know, procedures and new marketing and branding and stuff like that. And some of the stuff went really smooth. I assumed their phone company accounts and their alarm accounts because I didn't want any interruption there. And both of those items were a nightmare for 3 months. So if you can keep from assuming the other person's stuff, that would probably be my biggest takeaway.
But John, why the pressure, John?
What, to get it done?
Yeah. Why did you close it so fast?
That was it. The other guy, he wanted to be out by the end of May.
And you said lawyers don't work that fast, didn't you?
Yeah. Fortunately, I know him. We actually worked together on the ASCCA, the program at the college. He's a teacher at the college. So, I know him really well.
You jumped in. I mean, you talk about the deep end of the pool, and you didn't even have an air tank with you.
No, I didn't. And like I said, it's not like it was my second or third location or anything like that. It was, I didn't have anything to fall back on. So
it must be a testament to your systems, your procedures, and your people that you're probably not here. I mean, you would not have come on the show if you were, if you were desperate to keep that place going. So kudos to you, man.
Right. Thank you. It's every day's a new adventure. So if I get out of bed in the morning, I'm off to a great start. So
Scott Palava, are you ready for your second branch?
Actually, I was having a thought. I was in the deer stand this weekend, and I was thinking of maybe not necessarily a second branch, an expansion of our services. I had worked in a shop that was a mechanical and body shop, and I really liked how that worked. And I said, in the back of my mind, that would always be really cool. Well, this weekend I was sitting in the deer stand, and I thought about it. I'm like, I only got 20 some odd years left in me, so maybe I better pull the trigger on that. You're the first people I've ever heard that. My wife will probably lose it when she hears that. But
well, listen, I could keep this episode in the tank for a bunch of weeks until you tell her that you're crazy, and then she's going to say to you, Scott, you have too much time on your hands when you go hunting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Idle hands are the devil's workshop.
And so, I mean, you talk about a departure to collision. I mean, that is one interesting industry that's just going through so many changes.
Yeah. I don't know if it would ever be a feasible or realistic goal, but it was one of those things. If just trying to expand just to do the same thing, I don't think my market where I am. There's only so many cars to fix in this area, and there's, I don't see a growth that's going to be worthwhile for for that type for my market, but it's just something different. I mean, we're in the town, we've got five auto shops, and we have one body shop.
Got it.
So it kind of a lopsided market there.
We've heard so many on the show describe niche opportunities. You've got your bays. I mean, I'm getting ready to interview someone in 2 weeks is invested completely in ADAS calibration. And wow. I know you're in a small town. Greg Buckley's gone into uplifting, and he's doing police cars and vans, and he's putting safety devices on vehicles. And I've checked with Greg. I mean, there's so many other neat opportunities that are growing outside of that. And that to me would be, I'm not saying that the departure to collision is right or wrong for you at all, but it's almost like adding on to the current talent base that you have, that they can do that job.
Yeah. One of the things that I've been guilty of too is, when you say he's been doing some upfitting of vehicles and specialty stuff, me being that can-do guy that I'm going to do something, I'm going to take everything in. Well, I've also learned that I'm probably my own worst enemy, because I get into some of these things and they're not profitable. They're a big waste of time and space and energy. Granted, you might have a happy customer, but the staff hates you for it and everything else. So we have actually been kind of tightening our belt a little bit here and getting rid of some of the peripheral headaches and just concentrating recently on general auto repair and service, not the extras. I came in one weekend or one Monday after a weekend, and I had four RVs sitting outside my parking lot. We don't work on RVs.
Awesome.
And I went, why did I even say yes to one of them? Because once you have one here, they all show up. It screws up the flow of the shop. There's no room for them. My techs say, I don't know anything about these. And it's never the main powertrain or whatever. It's always the weird things in the RV. They want their refrigerator doesn't work or whatever.
Right.
We don't have time to learn that on the fly.
Yeah.
So Scott Gonzo Weaver, you were always, you know, when you were in business, Gonz, you were an electrical specialist. And I'm sure after all your years in business, they said, oh, this doesn't work. It's an electrical short. Oh, the lights don't come on. It doesn't matter how big or small it was. They said, go to Scott Gonzo's.
Yep. That's the way it was for 20, 30 years. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's your issue, Scott. I mean, you're the guy. You're the go-to guy. Doesn't matter. When Scott and I did our one-on-one, he was just so funny about we would take lawnmowers up to what big farm implements, right, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
So you're are you firing customers, or are you just going to walk away from certain kind of jobs?
Not necessarily firing them. There are some that I'm just, you know, I actually had the conversation yesterday with somebody. I said it's just not our specialty. It's not our area. Yeah. I referred them to somebody else that could do it. But a lot of them are understanding. And I've just found they're happy if we're able to handle the majority of what they have in the majority of their services.
Okay.
There's, you know, just like doctors, you know, you go to your GP. We're the GP. There's going to be specialists that they're going to need to see from time to time. And I can't always try to be the specialist because I'm going to end up upside down and with a headache.
Remarkable Results Radio and Napa Auto Care know the auto care industry is revving up. New technologies are changing cars and the way people use them. To stay in the driver's seat of all these advancements, you need to take charge of your learning, your business, and your legacy. Now, that's where 2020 Napa Expo comes in. With help from industry experts and the best suppliers and manufacturers, the 2020 Napa Expo will provide the innovations and answers you need to charge forward into the future. This is your chance to network with experts in the industry, discover the latest innovations that will help you stay market competitive, and learn more about the new products, services, and equipment you'll soon be using every day. Hey, if you missed this one-of-a-kind event in 2015, I'm here to tell you, you don't want to miss the 2020 Napa Expo. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are a few of the comments we've heard from Napa Auto Care Business Development Group members talking about their experience at the 2015 Napa Expo. And I quote, "You learn so much in the seminars that our guys find it really exciting and say, hey, I can do this when I get back." Another quote, "Napa continues to bring new programs up for us to get to the next level in marketing, business management, and training." And finally, "You'll come away with a lot of knowledge and friendships that you'll be able to leverage in your own business." Hey, take charge of your learning, your business, and your legacy, and join me at the 2020 Napa Expo in Las Vegas, April 6th through 9th, 2020. Hey, contact your Napa Auto Parts store today to reserve your package for this can't-miss event. Enrollment is going on right now. Hey, Gonz, good to have you here. I hear you're traveling. You're out where, in Houston?
Houston, yeah.
What's on your mind, man?
Oh, just another day at the shop, I guess you could say. But one of my big pet peeves has always been the job that you finished, did so well, paid out right, feel like you made a dollar on it, and the customer still comes back and says, hey, this wasn't like this before I picked up the car. And you wonder, well, how can that be? And sometimes it's something that's just totally unrelated. You're fixing the wipers and they're complaining about their power seat not working because, you know, like that last time I had the car in here. And, what does the shop owner do? Well, 99% of the time, he's going to bend over and say, I'll take care of this. I want to keep you as a customer. And hey, if you say it was working beforehand, maybe my guys did something, I'll make it right. So you make it right. And I'll tell you, in 30 some years, very seldom does that type of customer ever come back. So it's almost like lost leader money. You may have made a happy customer, as you assume, but they're still not coming back. Now, of course, there is a percentage that does. I'm just talking about the ones that don't.
So let me throw out, to piggyback on that, lots of discussion going on pre and post scan on vehicles. I mean, Collision's doing it now, and mechanical shops are talking about it because they want to have that baseline because it worked, you know, it worked pre and it worked post the repair. And the other thing was the digital vehicle inspection, the value of that is going to find these items that are working. And so, you know, here's the picture of it. And, you know, we turned on the wipers. They were working. It was checkmarked. Is that going to really help a lot of these areas, guys?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Well, think about it. Everything these days has some monitoring going on, you know, some coding, some CAN diagnostics, you know, somewhere every little bit of something in the car has some sort of, well, a history to it. So it's not unlikely, let's say, in this case, a power seat even, that the history code may turn up a date, a time that the last failure happened. And you could record it and, you know, have some kind of a legitimate legal reason to say, sir, no, this thing actually failed 6 months ago. Your wife just forgot to tell you about it or something, whatever the case may be. But, yeah, I think that's going to help a lot. In previous years, it was your word against theirs. But I think today's technology may solve some of those issues. I can't say they're going to solve them all, but it may save, you know, help in the long run.
You know, the DVI definitely helps a lot in these situations. You know, you get the, oh, this light wasn't on before. And, you know, one of the pictures we take is the tech gets in the car, starts it up, shuts the door, and takes a picture of the dash, and you can see every light that is or isn't on. You know, it helps quite a little bit. You know, we have a customer right now that we did a bunch of work, and when she came and picked it up, she brought it back a few days later. Hey, that noise, you guys didn't fix the noise. And she never mentioned a noise. She says, well, I just figured the work you were doing would fix it. And then this is at our new location, so this is a new customer. So we dig back in history. She's been trying to get this noise fixed for about 3 years, you know, looking in history. And she still says that, you know, it's our fault and that it does. So,
yeah, imagine that.
You know, and when you mentioned the, you know, the DVI, the other thing that I've seen too, though, is security systems in your shop, you know, surveillance systems, to protect those cases where people say there's damage to my car or this happened, you know, that scratch wasn't there, that dent wasn't there, this, you know, you guys did this, did that. It's amazing how many times when somebody makes those claims, you say, well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to check the security footage. I don't even have to go look at it. And they go, you know what? Maybe I'm mistaken. I don't think I've ever actually had to pull the security footage for that.
Yeah, but, I call it the walk around.
That's
the only time they ever walk to the passenger side of the car is after it leaves the repair shop. Never before, but after they leave the repair shop, boy, they've got to do that walk around.
Yeah,
I've done that same thing. Yeah, well, let's go look at the cameras, and all of a sudden the story changes.
So I don't think people are truly deceit or trying to be deceitful or dishonest. It's just their perception. I mean, we're consumers like anyone else. We spend our hard-earned money on things, and we have expectations. And sometimes those expectations are based on perceptions, and our perceptions are skewed. So,
Hey, we've all lost a pair of glasses that were probably sitting on top of our head. And I've had customers come in that swore up and down, and probably I should say the word swore in large letters, that I took the radio out of the car when their son actually said, you know, it would come by a day or so later. Yeah, I took mom's radio out of her car so you guys wouldn't steal it. Well, it's pretty common, you know.
Yeah.
So misconceptions, that's all. That really is what it comes down to. But how do you get that misconception away from the front lobby and get them to go, I remember that. And that is sometimes the hardest thing, because the emotional state of that customer may be at that point right there at the time they're writing the checkout that they're going to want to get into a heated argument over it. And you got to do your best to calm them all down.
Guys, I got to stop you for a moment and ask a question. In these stories that you're telling me, are they new customers?
Not necessarily.
Okay, so you may or may have not landed in my thought pattern here, but I'm going to throw it out. I want to throw out the words curb appeal. you know, you walk up to a place and sometimes you think based on how the place looks and what it, you know, how you feel in it, what you could get away with. And you walk into a really beautiful looking place, you know, clean, organized, professional. You know, consumer may not try something. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, Carm. I mean, yes, the place appearance has a lot to do with the initial, will I go there or not go there? But for what I can say after all my years of doing it, I think it's more of they talk to their friends or they Google searched you and they've got a pretty good idea where they're going. They're still going to be apprehensive when they come in there. And it may be because of the bill, maybe because of the way you diagnosed it, because the last guy didn't say the same thing. And there's always that chance that you got to be wrong because, you know, let's face it, you're a mechanic.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of on that note, one other thing too is, you know, it's how your people handle the situations. If you can give the customer a sense that you're going to take care of the problem, you know, that sort of thing, you know, it makes a big difference.
Well, have you ever run across the guy who enjoys the argument?
Yeah, that happens. You fire those people. That's all. You fire them, you move on.
yeah. But then you find that next customer who wants you to soft-spoke it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, to run the service counter, you've got to feel through a lot of people's egos. And, you know, let's say, okay, smooth them out a little bit. But, you know, there's a lot to that of dealing with different type of people, you know, from the Bible thumper to whatever, you know, the soccer mom. There's always a little bit of a problem because we're a service oriented business. Okay. And we also are that one business that they always think they're going to get ripped off.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea where, you know, we're a service business and, we are trying to maintain a level of professionalism. I use doctors a lot because people tend to, you know, you go into any hospital, clinic, whatever, and they tend to all maintain the same image of professionalism and respect. You know, and there's a lot of discussions about that. But then we will we'll be all over the place with how we present our business to the consumer, whether it's the Motorhead shop or the dealership alternative or whatever it may be. Our image is all over the place, and that makes it difficult for the consumer to understand who they're dealing with.
Well, right.
We have so many different consumers, so many different customers coming into our place, and we're trying to juggle all those too.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, the image of your shop, you know, everybody's going to have a different look, you know, where, you know, you're in Minnesota, I'm in San Diego, you know, somebody does European cars, somebody does Volkswagen Bugs. You really need to make your appearance so it's relatable to the people that you're, you know, that you're trying to attract.
Your target market.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, if, you know, you're running a Mercedes BMW shop, do you want pictures of Volkswagen Bugs on the wall and, you know, things like that? You know, you really don't, you know, and, you know, just a clean shop. I've walked into, I can't tell you how many shops you walk into. And, you know, the first, you know, for me, you know, I'm a guy, I own a shop. I walk in and go, ugh, you know, this is kind of scary, right? So you can just imagine.
You're saying, John, he represents me too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we all, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we talk about our competition. I don't have any competition per se. Okay. There's a million cars that drive by my shop every year. I sure as hell can't fix a million cars, not even close. So, you know, and it benefits us all to, have that professional look, professional feel. Anybody that isn't trying to attract the female customer is out of their mind, because I'd say probably 75% of the people that walk through my door are female at the end of the day. And we're not the highest end shop, But I tell you, we have flowers on the counter every day. We have plants in the corners. We have clean bathroom. You know, the out front, outside, out front, you know, clean sidewalks. We have grass. We have flowers. You know, it says something to the public, you know, that the people that tend to want cheap, 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 you know, they look at a place and go, oh, they've got nice flowers and grass and they're clean. I'm probably not going to get cheap, cheap, cheap here. You know,
when I, the first time, Carm and I spoke, we were talking about, you know, how I got started in the business and, or in my shop. And, I was renting half of a building. There was an auto parts store in one half and I had the shop in the other half. And boy, everybody thought, well, they'd go over to the auto parts store and they'd buy the parts there. And then they come over and have me put them on, you know, but it was a gravel parking lot. And yeah. I was the first shop in my community to have a waiting room, you know, just a reception area.
Wow.
Every place before that was what I called a farm shop. You walked in the door and you were in the production area.
Right.
Yeah. And we were in, our community was growing at the time. Housing was going like mad. And there was nowhere in this town that I would have sent my wife with the kids in to have a car worked on. I thought, we're never going to survive. Everybody's going to continue to travel to the metro area to get their car serviced. Yeah. So that's why I started my business. Now, I've been here almost 14 years, and it wasn't until last year I paved my parking lot. I finally bit the bullet, and I wanted to years ago, but during the economy downturn, I couldn't do it. Last year, I was able to pull it off. I cannot tell you what blacktop did for my image.
Yep.
In the public, the absolute vast majority of problem price shoppers, all of them, they're gone. It was unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And even the farmers that used to complain about the $20 tire repair, now when they come in and it's $40 to fix it, they're like, oh, that was it? I never understood what you know, how blacktop would make that big of a deal, but it made a huge, huge change. And I did some landscaping and stuff, but that pavement was that was the best money I've ever spent for my business.
You know, in some ways, you know, doing those repairs, Scott, actually entices you to say I can charge more. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying
an aggressive thing.
Right. Because you're seeing a better quality.
Mm-hmm.
And, to get rid of the price shoppers is, you know, that's a big thing. That's more power to you, bud, doing that.
Yeah.
Operation Blacktop. I love it, guys. I love it. Now, let me be the naysayer. Uh-oh. I love that it happened. Good things got. I feel, you know, and I empathize with what you did. But what about all the shops that do have blacktop and it's not working for them? Because there's more broke than just blacktop. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
For me, I think it was very important because it was, we were stagnant for so long. There people have been driving by. It'd been the same thing over and over. It saw a major curb appeal change.
You made noise.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I call it.
Yeah. We have a local community Facebook page, you know, the happenings page. And it was amazing to see how many people in town were just talking about there's blacktop going in there. I mean, not even my customers. They just thought it was the coolest thing since sliced bread.
That's that small town thing, you know. How cool, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, Scott got a haircut this week.
It doesn't get any cheaper as it gets thinner, though.
So guys, training, you know, I'm big on it. The industry's big on it. We have to do more training. I did a great show at Apex about the value of trainers. And, you know, you're going out there, you're getting training. And is part of the problem of that shop owners aren't investing in today's training because they don't think they'll see the problems that they're being trained on for 5 years?
Well, yeah, I could say that on some of the new stuff because it's still under warranty, maybe for years, you know, 100,000 miles or more. I think there should be some issues brought up that we need to train even for the stuff that are 10 or maybe even 15 years old. I wouldn't go past 15. I mean, that's getting pretty old. But yeah, I could see where that's a big issue. I mean, I've branched out and now gone into the instructor side of things and do some training. And I find out, you know, trainers need trained. Hello, me. It's not as easy as you think. Yeah. But I think the training today is probably more important than it ever has been in the last 10 or 15, 20 years. And, you know, when I started, you could learn a lot of things from the guy in the next bay. Yeah. You know, there's what one way to set a set of points, you know, you move the distributors, set the timing. Well, now we're talking about multiplexing computer systems and whatnot. And today's mechanic isn't yesterday's mechanic. Everything has changed. And the only way to get that kind of training is to stay up with it. And I will be one, and I will back up any trainer for this one point. And that is, if you go to a training facility, a convention or whatever, and you say, "Oh, I didn't learn anything," I'll bet you learned at least one something in that class, no matter how small it might be. To me, the big thing about training, even for someone that already knows it, it is learning the repetitiveness, learning that thing that, yes, what I thought I knew is correct. Yeah. That's what you learned. And I like to make that point that training is that important today, very important.
Yeah, and this is something that I kind of think we have beginner techs, meter techs, high-end techs, and they all require different training. And we've actually, between our association, our NAPA Business Development Group, our ASCCA, we figure out what people want, and we put those trainings on. You know, we also talk to the manufacturers, you know, NAPA, CarQuest, places like that. And we let them know, hey, this is the training that we're looking to have. You know, I think you can be proactive in requesting training. You know, San Diego, it's surprising. We're a big city, but the trainers stop at LA. They don't make it down to San Diego. There's a lot of training we don't get. So we, you know, we're not a small community, but we're kind of left out because our next door neighbor is such a large area. So yeah, we have to go out and bring in trainers to train on this stuff, whether it's technical, you know, management, whatever. You know, like I said, our partners, you know, NAPA, they're great. You know, this is what we need. They go get it. Same with, you know, the other parts vendors. And then, like I said, ASCCA, all of those are great places to, you know, they'll put on training, but you can also, if you work with the association, when you work with your partners, you can get the training that you want.
That's interesting, because I'd like to look into that, because in a lot of the training offered around here is either the latest and greatest, just rolling off the assembly line, so you're prepared. But then, like Carm said, we won't see that for 5 to 7 years in our shop, and by that time, you've forgotten all of it. Mm-hmm. It's all you've done is waste your time.
You know, after I said that and I listened to John and Gon's talk, I started to think about the word catch up. That there's if you hadn't been to training in a few years, no matter, you know, if it's the latest and the greatest, sooner or later, the latest and the greatest becomes standards you got to know. And so if you're not doing some perpetual 40-hour training, no matter if it's video or if it's leader led, you're going to be playing catch up, and you're going to be behind the eight ball.
And then you have the issue that you go to this latest greatest class and you go, boy, I got to buy that scanner, I got to buy this tool, you know, whatever, and you find out I don't need this for 4 or 5 years, and then all of a sudden 4 or 5 years pass by and they've made a cheaper tool to replace the one you bought.
But that's not the excuse not to invest in be cutting edge and being able to take all these, because you'll always find an excuse not to do something. You can dig as deep as you want, and you'll always find an excuse. And then think of the cutting edge shops that are out there. They're not woulda, coulda, shoulda. They're not waiting. They're just moving forward. I call it bold italic. And getting it done. You know, John, you brought up something so cool that I think I'd love to just develop a little bit, and that is, we asked our training partners for the classes that we needed. And I'm not sure there's enough of that going on. They're just saying, okay, what's on the docket? Instead of saying what's on the docket, we need this.
Yeah. Are they looking at what is the latest and greatest oftentimes and just saying that's what people are going to want? They never really have asked.
It's what the techs are struggling with in the shop. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The, you know, the new ADAS stuff, our automotive service councils, we have a connected cars committee, and we're looking at, you know, that for the ADAS is the, you know, the cameras and the, you know, the lane warnings and all that stuff. And, you know, one of the things we've tasked that committee with is to identify training and identify tooling, you know, stuff that we should buy right now. They're like, yeah, don't buy anything because everything is evolving so quickly. And I think, Carm, you mentioned you're interviewing somebody that's what they're going all in on. And that's great, you know, but like you said, 5 years from now, that all that equipment might be, you know, non-existent.
No doubt, but I still believe
a very small little part.
But guys, yeah. I still believe he'll be established as an ADAS specialist
in
the marketplace.
Absolutely.
No matter what will evolve, somebody's going to go out and say, oh, no matter what happens, we're going to go to John's place for that occasional ADAS calibration that we have to have. Yep. Because, you know, and I don't know where the ROI is on all of that. And to me, that's one of the things that I haven't asked those questions of this shop owner yet. But that's the part I'm curious about.
Well, the other thing, you know, not necessarily the technology that in the diagnostic equipment and stuff that would change over the course of the 5 years, but I don't want to say shortcuts or silver bullets, but the pattern failures hadn't even been not figured out yet in the first year or so. Those pattern failures could be diagnosed in those ways to diagnose those might be different than what's in the service manuals or the trouble trees. We went through that recently with a newer minivan, had an issue. Two techs went through all the trouble trees, got all the way to the bottom, and it was inconclusive. And he goes, now I'm going to go back to doing it my way. And he had it figured out in about 4.5 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to re-engineer it in your mind. And, you know, he says, you know, that's one of the things that he's, you know, fearful of is if as the stuff gets more complex, the engineers can't even anticipate the failures.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're right, Scott, because you get a whole lot of those issues where the test procedure is 7 pages long, and all you have to do is check one silly
one wire. But it wasn't even included in that testing.
Oh, it might have been on page 8. You know?
In this case, it wasn't. That was the thing about it. It was just a total fluke that he says, I'm going to go back to how I would have done this, you know, prior, you know, in 10 years ago.
At Apex, guys, as I was there during Industry Week, a lot of discussion on OE service procedures. It was almost what everybody kept saying. John, Scott, do you guys agree with that?
It's a wit aspect, I guess, because I wasn't
there. If you're going to fix anything and fix it right, even the deep level of ADAS, if you don't have access to the OE service procedures and follow it letter by letter, point by point.
Nah, I don't buy that.
You don't?
No. Oh, no. Because a lot of the codes today are correlated codes. You may get a code for, I don't know, air conditioner, and what the real problem is the right rear view mirror, outside mirror thermostat isn't working or something. You know, things aren't, you know, all, it's not a cut and dry code. You know, the code may be a direction to go, but it's not necessarily the answer. And the problem with the factory diagnostics, a lot of times they want you to check every single wire on the first couple of steps when, you know, look, just skip all this stuff. Get down to where the meat of the problem is.
Okay, well, you're an electrical specialist, but this discussion was all about ADAS. And since it's so new to everyone, if you're going to play in that arena, you got to play in the OE side of that?
Let's go all the way back to when we switched from R12 to 134. You had to change all the lines. You had to do all this. You had to change all this. And how many times do you find out you didn't have to do half the stuff that the procedure said you had to?
Oftentimes, we are the guinea pigs. We're the field testers.
Yes.
I remember airbag systems when we started doing SRS. It was, you know, pull the fuse, disconnect the battery, open all the doors, walk around, hop on one foot, you know, and then while you're working at it, don't ever put your face in front of it. Yeah. I had the epiphany one day. I went, well, this clock spring on this caravan keeps opening and closing every time. It's never deployed the bag. That open and close of that break in that clock spring has never deployed the bag in the customer's face. What difference is if I unplug that airbag versus you know, that broken clock spring?
You know how many times I have fixed turn signals in a car from another repair shop because it had a airbag and they were scared that it was going to go off on. Mm-hmm. It never happened, of course. But you know, you read it in there, like you said, Scott. It'll say in there, "Oh, disconnect everything, and well, let's sit for 10 minutes because the airbag could be deployed," and it never does. Yeah.
But I think that even if you looked at from the original inception all the way to where we are now, at most it's disconnect the battery.
Yeah,
they have learned that it is extremely unlikely that you're going to have a deployment when.
Right. Yeah. And that goes back to
normal service.
If you're saying, like Carm said, to follow the factory information to the letter, you know, you're going to have to walk around the car six times during a full moon carrying a live trigger.
But today, new technology, they're not seeing it as much. There's only one way you get started, and that is, as everyone had basically said to me on the panel that I was that was moderating, that you got to go follow to the letter. Okay.
Yeah, I think using your common sense along with as much information as you can get is key. Because, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of stuff that's, you know, how many times do you see check this, check that, replace with known good part? If not, move on and replace with another known good part. And, you know, at some point you have to use your common sense with this stuff.
Right. Have you seen?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the labor times become decreased on that same operation over the course of 5 years because they figured out that you know, it can be done better? Well, how did they figure that out? That's because us in the field have figured out they've modified it.
Yeah.
So, you're on page one of the diagnostic and said, oh, if you get to here, go to page five.
Yeah.
We just eliminated a whole bunch of
So you know, one of the, you know, things along this line, I mentioned earlier that I'm, you know, with ASCCA in California.
Oh, by the way, let me just congratulate you on the incoming presidency.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited about it. I've been working at the state level for a long time. And, you know, we bring a lot of value to, you know, to the members. And, you know, we have quite a few committees. GovCom is one of them. And, you know, they work really hard to make sure that the manufacturers give us that information so that we have stuff to use, you know, whether it's information, tooling, parts. You know, there's a big deal right now with the locksmith ID. You know, we tried to get a control module for the transmission on a Mercedes last week. And if you don't have a locksmith ID, they won't sell it to you because it's part of the theft deterrent system. So, but yeah, the associations bring so much value, you know, to the shops. It's kind of sad because ASCCA is the largest trade association in California. I believe there's 35,000 shops across the state, and we have a whopping 500, 600 members. And it blows me away that, you know, everybody isn't a member of the association. I know when I first opened my doors, I knew absolutely nothing about running a shop and, you know, the laws. Yeah, right. I had no clue, you know, these laws can affect me, you know, and fortunately I joined our association pretty quick and I learned, you know, there's a huge value in the relationships you build, just the information, you know, that you can get from the association. You know, if you're having a problem, you know, you're working on a mini and ever work on minis, hey, there's half a dozen guys that specialize in minis in association. You call one up and say, hey, you know, I don't know, what should I do? And you know, they'll help you with that. You know, there's just so many things. You know, we've worked on quite a few of the laws, you know, that are out there. The diagnostic connector was one of the things that our association worked with. You know, we work with the bar on a regular basis, and the bar comes out and says, you can't do this, you can't do that. And we're like, well, that doesn't make sense. And we kind of changed their thought process.
John, tell the audience that BAR in California means...
Yeah, Bureau of Automotive Repair. It's not a place to, not a place to get a drink. It makes you want a drink, but it's not the place to go to get a drink.
Wait, yeah. John keeps talking about a bar somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Did I miss an episode?
Where some of the best ideas come from, right?
Yeah.
I must have missed an episode. I know Carm has a glass of wine occasionally, but what's this?
Yeah. Yeah, but there's, you know, and there's lots of associations across the, you know, across the country, you know, there's ASA and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of state, you know, associations. And you know, I couldn't have imagined my journey from one guy, half of a shop, one rack to where I'm at today without my associations that I belong to, the Napa Business Development Group I belong to, the 20 group I belong to, the trainers that, that I've listened to, you know, and stuff like this. This stuff is so valuable. You just, like I said, I would not be here today if I didn't have all these people in my corner.
Well, thanks for that. A conclusion for me is, as I've interviewed, you know, the top 20-25% in the industry, that seems to be a common denominator amongst all of them. They're in a 20 group, they're in a business development group in their community, they're in an association, and they've used every one of those components of those memberships to drive their success. Yeah. So thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah. And, you know, if you not only are in an association, but you join the leadership of the association, you can help guide it the way you want it to be. You can go, you can ask for the ADAS training. You can ask for, hey, I got a guy that wants to, you know, work on 67 bugs. So let's do a class on, you know, how to pull engines on it, you know, whatever, you know, that's a little far fetched, but you know, you can ask for whatever, whatever it is that you need. So,
but at the same time, there's probably guys that those are becoming a dying breed, but that's there's still true. A lot of those cars out there that need to be serviced.
Right. And why not have a class on it?
Yeah. We might have to start doing some retro stuff because, you know, who's going to keep the old points-driven stuff running?
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to the training, which is more important, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the consumer is going to hunt for people that have gray hair.
No hair.
Or no hair.
But we won't be here forever, though. That's the problem.
You know, no, it's...
Yeah, you're right.
I have a younger guy that he wants to become a technician, and so... We recently were talking and he's like, you know, well, what kind of training should I take? And, you know, we talked a little and he's going to start going to all the training that we can find on the ADAS systems and things like that. And he's like, well, that stuff's way above my knowledge, you know, but the funny thing is having never worked on it, he knows more about it than I do because you know, he's 25 years old. This is stuff that he's seen. You know, if I could hand him a carburetor, he wouldn't know what it is, but he could carry on a much, you know, more intelligent conversation about the ADAS systems than I can at this point.
He's going to be the guy that walks out with a scanner up to a 68 Camaro too.
Yes, he will. But yeah, but it, you know, we're all looking for new people in the industry, new technicians and things like that. It's stuff like that that can get the younger people interested in getting in the industry. You know,
well, when people of the younger ages start to realize that the car is a computer, I mean, it's still a car to a lot of them. But when they get that thought in their head, like, dude, this thing's really a computer. That's what I do. Yeah. You might find a whole new breed of mechanics out there.
Mm-hmm. I actually saw an article, I believe it was yesterday, that specifically said that this generation of high school students are shifting towards the trades, going to trade school versus college. Yeah. They're finally seeing what we've been saying for years, and they're seeing their parents that had college educations and whatnot that were struggling and, you know, through the recession, all that. So, I mean, just that's one article of how many, but I'm, you know, I was very happy to see that.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I'm going to be doing an interview soon all about Gen Z.
Nice.
And I've seen the information on it already, and I've heard a lot of people talk that they actually look a little bit like boomers. Yes. So it's so interesting. You know what I love about Shop Talk? We went to a million places that we didn't even expect. And I so appreciate John Epstein, Scott Gonza Weaver, and Scott Palava coming on and just talking amongst yourself, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I take a lot of good stuff. I actually have notes for myself for stuff that I've learned. So, you know, thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, John.
No, and it, you know, this is one of those things that it really helps solidify my feeling that I'm doing something right in my business too, because you know, every day it seems like I'm just trying to keep my head above water, but being able to sit down and have these conversations with you guys says a lot about how I must be doing something right.
Thank you, man. And let's all raise our hand. Let's give Scott a vote for Blacktop.
Blacktop.
Thanks, guys. Hey, thanks, John Epstein, Scott Palava, and Scott Gonza Weaver for making Shop Talk a wide open forum for shared ideas, opportunities, and challenges. Your experience and expertise was invaluable to this episode. Find the bios and the talking points for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E395. Hey, please don't forget the books page on the website. All the books we talk about on the podcast are there for your review. You can even order printed or audio versions. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm sure you agree, your learning curve never sounded this good.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.